This is Mary Jane Pidienko interviewing Candy McGuire for the History of Alaska Oral History Project.
Candy, tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to Kodiak and how your family came.
Well, I was born and raised in Kodiak. My mom and dad came up here separately. My mom came up with her first husband from Nebraska, and my big brother. And her first husband died in a boat accident when they used to skiff back and forth from Bell's Flats to town. He was a poker player and got caught out in a storm, went down, and they found his body in Gibson's Cove. And my dad came up in the Navy and liked it, so he came back and he met my mom, and he played saxophone down at the old Beachcombers, and my mom and him got together and got married and had me and my little brother.
How old were you when the tidal wave hit Kodiak?
I was 11.
What do you remember about it and the earthquake?
It was Good Friday, and everybody was home for the holidays, you know, Easter holiday. We had Good Friday off. So we were laying around, relaxing. My nanny, the lady that babysat me, Rika, was over. And my mom were sitting at the dining room table. Our house overlooks Potato Patch Lake, so we had a pretty good view of everything that was happening. And one side's the ocean, the other side's Potato Patch Lake. And I was laying on the couch. My brother was there my little brother was there somewhere, and my dad was sitting in his chair watching TV. And I thought there was a monster under the couch lifting me up. So I jumped off the couch and looked at the couch like it was, you know, this monster, because I was scared of monsters back then. And there was nothing. And by this time, everybody else was looking around. And then everybody started running for the door. It's a natural place that you go during tidal or earthquake, is for the, so you can look outside and kind of hang onto the door frame. And so there were my mom, my dad, Rika, me and my little brother standing at the door looking out. I was in the back, so I couldn't really see, but I could peek out and see the treetops swaying back and forth, and I could see the parking lot and the cars. Our Corvair and our Volkswagen were like almost touching. They were going opposite directions, and they'd come to the middle and almost touch. And I didn't see it, but my mom, I think, that was in front, saw the lake that had 3 to 4 foot deep ice on it crack and big chunks of it fly up in the air. It was very loud. It sounds like, well, if you can imagine everything around you moving, all of the, it's just very, very loud. It's a loud roar. And it lasted for 5 minutes. 5 minutes is a long time to have earth move underneath your feet and be terrified. And that's what we were. We were terrified. And then it was over. And I can't remember what happened exactly right after, but I remember my dad's drink fell off the coffee table and one of our mirrors fell and broke. And that's about all that really happened in our house. And we went outside, and during a earthquake, a lot of times the water will suck out of an area and come back, and basically that's why there were chunks of dock floating down the channel, and there happened to be one chunk of dock that had a small airplane and a man standing on it. He was yelling and screaming for somebody to come and save him, and so there was a boat going out there to get him. I don't know what I think they tied it off and drug it somewhere to save the airplane. And one of the neighbors came running up from down below and said their fence just went. And at this time, we still didn't know that tidal waves came after earthquakes. We had no idea. We didn't know anything about it. Still didn't make any sense. You know, we didn't really understand. And so the radio was telling everybody to go to high ground. And we didn't really know why. So my mom and dad gathered up all of our paperwork, the canceled checks, different receipts, and we got in the car and drove downtown. My babysitter, Rika, I was real close with. I spent the night with her a lot, and her chihuahua had just had puppies, and I'd been promised to spend the night with her that night because I hadn't been able to see them. The night before, my mom said, You can see them anytime. Don't worry about it. I never told you this story last time. And so I was going to go downtown and spend the night with her. We were driving down to check to see how the puppies were, because her house was downtown. And we drove down Rezanov, and we got to the bottom, and they had it barricaded. They told us we couldn't go through, and the streets were all wet, and we thought that they were scared of fires from the oil and stuff, or, you know, there's maybe oil got leaked out of oil barrels, and they're spraying down in case there was a fire. We didn't know that there were tidal waves coming in already and wetting down the streets. And so we turned around and went back home, and I never did get to see the Chihuahua puppies because they all died in the tidal wave. And what happened to them was strange because the house was still there, and you could see the water line where the water went up to about a foot below the ceiling. It was like around where Max Sporting Goods store is right now. And there's a lot of houses back behind the front road there. And the big dogs, there were two adult dogs there that were alive. And they had spent the night on the mattress that floated a foot up below the ceiling. But the puppies all died, but you could see where the mother dog had tried to pull them all up on this mattress and keep them up there. But they all died, so I never got to see the little baby puppies. That was traumatic for me when I was 11 years old. But anyhow, so then we went back home, and we figured we'd go up and stay in higher ground up at friends of ours' house, the Christoffersons, and they live about five or six houses towards going out of town from the junior high school, and we could see the ocean from there. And it was high enough up where we felt safe. And my dad played sax. I'm not sure why we were up there, except it was safe. They invited us, and he played the piano, and my dad played the saxophone. So we went up there, and there were a bunch of kids up there that all knew each other. And one of the parents went down to find their dog and came back with a case of whiskey that they found. It was out of one of the stores, I guess. There were tidal waves coming and going all night long, and people would go out and look for stuff, even though there were tidal waves coming and going. And I remember my mom talking on the phone right before we went up there to a friend in Oregon, and she was constantly saying, oh, here comes another one, there's another one, there are aftershocks. And so every time we'd have another jolt earthquake, it was like being on a boat. It moved all night long. The island moved. We had a lot of aftershocks, and it just never quit. It was never still. We had them for months later also. And so we went up to their house, and they played and danced and drank whiskey. But all the chandeliers, the chandeliers I used to have in those days that hung over the dining room tables were all, I remember mostly them. We had one, and the people that we stayed in the house that we stayed at had one, and they moved all night long. And we could hear the roar of the waves. If we would peek our head outside and look down towards town, we could hear the roar. And during this time was, you know, all of town was being demolished, and it was kind of like this loud roar happening. It was a big storm, like a big storm. And let's see, then about midnight we decided it was over. So we went home. We got home and we ran down to the ocean shore, which is the channel across from Woody Island, and the water was running parallel to the shore rather than like a tide runs in to the shore. And it was black with oil. We looked at it. We ran back up the hill. And my mom and dad had realized that out in the lake, you could just barely see some silhouettes. And there were the old beachcombers, a log cabin, all of the small boat, or the small small plane airport that was down on Mission Beach, was in the lake and the trailer park, and about, well, we didn't know how many cars in, but there were 50 or 60 cars in the lake, and the ice was all pushed around the shore. It was not in the lake, just all these silhouettes of these houses. Well, we went to bed, and about 1 o'clock in the morning, about an hour after we got here, my mom said I was asleep. My mom heard this huge roar and went and looked out the window, and all the houses and all the trailers and everything that was in the lake was pushed down, all the way down to one side, all the way back to the other side, and brought all the way back down, and then brought to the middle and dropped down by a water that came into the lake from Mission Beach.
Did anybody die in the lake?
No, nobody died in the lake. But I do know one family who lived down in that house who had to run across the ice that was cracked in their stocking feet, the LeGrues, Jeanette and Antoinette and Raymond LeGrue. And to get away from the tidal, they had to run across the ice. That sounded pretty scary to me. So the next day, there was no telephones, no electricity, no running water. And my dad's put the coffee pot on the burn barrel outside our house. And nobody worked. Nobody was allowed downtown. There was no way to get anywhere because you couldn't go through town. And most of the places were all destroyed or disaster areas. So everybody kind of wandered around and looked at all the damage and stuff. Oh, this was on a Saturday. And I wandered down to where the old Beachcombers used to be, where the Salvation Army is right now. And I was with our new dog, who was 8 months old at the time. And I got down to the very bottom of the hill, about a quarter mile away from our house. Somebody came running up from the beach screaming, "Everybody run, a 90-foot tidal wave is coming." And due to the fact that the tidal wave the night before was 15 feet, everybody ran, stampeded to their cars, and took off. And I was running hysterically home. And everybody drove right past me. Finally, somebody stopped to pick me up right before my house, dropped me off, and I ran in and told my mom and dad. And we listened on the radio. We didn't hear anything. Finally, we realized it was a rumor. It wasn't true. Nothing happened. Nothing came. So then we decided to, we were being warned to go to higher ground again. So we packed up once again and moved. Oh, no. I know what it was. There's no running water or no heat or anything in our house. So we went to a house, a big house, that is now, it was the Shanley's house then. It is now one of the older houses facing Bronoff Park, and they had a fireplace in a big house. So five of us families went and stayed there for the night, and we put on plays for the parents all night long. And what I didn't know at that time was that one of the men that was there had TB, and all of his children were exposed to TB, and I didn't know that until the next year, when my brother and I got time tests and it was positive. All the rest of my friends had been on the pills because they had found that out, but they, during a disaster, a lot of times they miss people, and we were two of the people that were missed. But we'd already cured ourselves, so it was okay. We never did take the pills. We had to have x-rays from then on. And let's see.
Did you know any of the people out at Chiniac that were out there camping that weekend?
Oh yeah, there were people in Chiniac camping. We all went out. We knew all the people because we went out camping with them a lot. All of us lived on the base back when civilians lived on the base, and they would take any kids that wanted to go out. So I got to go camping with whoever went out there. It was Quonset huts at Chiniac Point. They're all gone now, but past the, I can't think of any of those things that are underneath the tunnels under the water where the salmon run. And after the earthquake, it took about a half an hour for the first big wave to come. And all the people in Chiniac that were camping out had decided to send several people in. There were several families out there, and each family, I think, sent a few people in to check and see what was going on in town. And the rest of them stayed out there. And all the people that left got to Calson Bay Inn just in time for, I think, the first big wave to come in, and most of them were killed. There was a guy I knew who was 2 years older than me, Ricky Bojan. He ended up they found him hanging in a tree, a cottonwood tree. And my band director, Mr. Schultz, was him and his family died. I think the whole car was taken. And there was this poor man in a Volkswagen who made it. He got to higher ground. I think his car went with his wife and new baby in it, but he made it. He lived. And but they're the only people that died. There were several of them that died, and that was the only people that died because the rest of the people were up on high ground. They were kind of caught because Calson Bay is such a wide, it's a low bay, and it's very, when it goes way back, and that's how the tidal wave builds. It builds on a flat lower place. It was only 5 feet higher, but it was enough to go all the way back into Calson Bay.
But none of the people died that were out at Chiniac Point.
No. No, you had to be either on ocean level or 5 or 10 feet up. Like this house is 100 feet up. There's no way, unless it was a huge, you know, tidal wave that we've never had before. The tidal wave we had was 15 feet. So. And a tidal wave builds on natural ocean shores. That's why it destroyed the town, because it was natural shores down there, and the wave just kind of went up the gradual incline and was able to creep up into the town further. And let's see.
Which destroyed Kodiak more, the earthquake or the tidal wave?
The earthquake didn't do anything. Kodiak is solid rock, so we didn't have fissures and big cracks in the ground like Anchorage and other places that have fill do and aren't solid rock. We had a few cracks in the runway out in the bays. Is about all. People lost a few things that fell off shelves and stuff, but we didn't have any cracks in the ground. Kodiak's the perfect place to be if you want to be in an earthquake, because it's solid rock. Now the tidal wave, which we didn't know anything about, that it destroyed everything, including the brand new parking meters that the city had just put in downtown that we've never had since.
What did Kodiak look like before the tidal wave?
Let's see. Kodiak was, after the tidal wave, go back up a little bit. After the tidal wave, we weren't allowed to go downtown. It was closed off, and urban renewal came in from the government and burnt the town down and started over again, filled the whole town in, so we had a 40-foot embankment to protect us from further tidal waves, and got rid of all the old buildings and put a brand new town up for us.
And you liked the town better before? How it was more old-fashioned and with wooden walkways and everything.
Yeah, you're supposed to ask me if I liked the town better.
I did.
You asked me what the town used to look like.
Yeah.
It sounded better when you asked me. Did I
okay,
like it better?
Did you like it better before or after the tidal wave?
I liked it a lot better before the urban renewal came in. They destroyed a lot of buildings that didn't need to be destroyed, but it was more cost efficient to just bulldoze and burn the whole town down and start over again. And so that's what they did. I had one friend who, he was older, but I just found out recently that he had metal shop downtown and was trying to revive his metal shop, and there's nothing wrong with it. It was perfectly fine. And he was told he had 2 hours to get everything out of there because they were going to bulldoze down the building. And so he lost his business. And Urban Renewal bulldozed him down. And for a long time, we had a lot of like ticky-tacky shacks. Crafts was like a plywood building, and with these like plywood walkways. Everything was plywood everywhere, you know, it was real crummy. Because before that, we had a very, unique, quaint little town with wooden walkways and false fronts and neat old stores that were individually built one at a time throughout all the years, you know, and there was a lot of personality in them. The old Wadlinger drugstore is one of those kind of stores that I remember you'd walk in and the floor planks would creak and there was a little bell on it and there was little panes in the window and in the display windows were little pane windows and the old crafts dry goods store was like on a dock and you'd walk in downstairs, it would be all like hardware, and you'd walk up these old stairs in the back and it was just like an old fashioned store with spools of material and all this stuff and behind the counter and a big long counter out there with all of the clothes folded and stacked on tables and stuff. And, you know, it was right on the shore there. And the old Kodiak Hotel had that bear that's down in the harbor. That was in front of it, and it was back further, like where the Holmes Johnson Clinic is. And there was the old Naughton's Bakery that had the best baked goods ever. The house that is on Reznov that everybody calls the haunted house was downtown. Right when you came in from the base, you turned a corner and came down right where Jack Mann's is. It was right about in there. And it had a store behind it that was a shoe store. And then across the street from that was Old Knutson's, which is another old store. All these stores have these like creaky, cranky little old wood floors. And they had like wood stoves in the back of them. And Knutson's always had lots of Jenny dolls in it. And we'd go down there and pick up Jenny dolls. And there was the old Orpheum Theater, had the glass bubble where you got the tickets from, and the candy counter was all mirrored in the back of it. You know, it was all red velvet and stuff. And, I mean, red walls and red floors, and it was really neat. And then down from that was the old Polar Bear, which is a cafe, an old cafe with the soda fountain stools all built into the floor. And the pool hall was called, oh gosh, what was that called? I can't remember, but it had those big glass blocks that separated the soda fountain from the pool hall, you know, and that's where all the teenagers went and hung out. And down by the ferry dock was a place called DNA, Donnelly and Atchison's. It was another building that was built out on the water on a pier, and that's where all the kids went to buy penny candy. And most of the roads leading out were like dirt roads with grass growing all over. Downtown, there was a big hill that was between the bowling alley and the mall. There's a huge hill with a old concrete building on top. It was like the old prison building. And they actually blasted that whole hill out to make the fill for the landfill when they filled it in so we wouldn't get destroyed by a tidal wave again. And we had an underground bowling alley that was totally wiped out by the tidal wave because it was filled with water. There were bowling balls, I guess, floating all over down there. And the old Artinger building, their house that's now in Reznov, was downtown, and they had their store in the bottom of it. And right down there, what would it be right now? Like where the Mecca is, there were lots of cottonwood trees and people's residential houses in there that had been there for a long time. And you know, it was just a little bit more quaint. And,
so after the tidal wave, they burnt everything down and made it more commercial downtown.
Yeah, they just built everything in and then just built new buildings everywhere.
Did people whose houses were downtown have to relocate, or did they build those?
I think a lot of people got money from the government for a national disaster to either rebuild, or some of them moved their house. Artingers were able to move theirs because their house was up a little higher. But I remember there was one alley downtown that had always had these like marine specimens in the back window. Whenever you'd walk downtown and walk through this alley, you could always see these weird things in formaldehyde in the back of these windows. It was one of my memories of being a child and being downtown.
So were you really excited as a child during the earthquake? Did you have a lot of fun?
It was great fun. We got to stay at everybody's house for five or six different families together and put on plays all night long. And it was, you know, it was the scary part was the earthquake. Everything else was fun. You can get away from a tidal wave, but you can't get away from the ground when it's moving.
How long did the disaster last, like the tidal wave and the earthquake?
After the earthquake, it happened about five or so. So, and then the first wave came a half an hour later, and then it continued all the way through the night. And like I said, I think one in the morning was the last wave. And basically, it was the end of the tide, the higher tide, and then it started going back down again.
How long did it take to rebuild the town afterwards? Years, or did they do it real fast?
They built the ticky-tacky stuff. You know, like in the first few months, we were all shopping downtown. That was exciting too, even though we didn't realize we'd never see our old town again. It was exciting to go downtown and see all these new buildings, and you know, it was just everything was different and exciting. And, you know, I can't remember really. But yeah, it was just, it was fun.
Is there anything else you'd like to tell about the earthquake, any little stories that you remember? People doing one thing or that you think we covered everything?
Yeah, I think we got it. I can't remember anything else.
All right, well, that concludes our interview.